You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins, my co-host. And today we have the pleasure of talking with Derwin Gray. Derwin is the lead pastor at Transformation Church in North Carolina. He is the author of a couple different books. The first that came out a couple years ago is Limitless Life. It's a great little book. And then he has a new one that just came out called The High Definition Leader. And this one's unique because it is about building multi-ethnic churches in a multi-ethnic world. So it's not your stereotypical leadership book with just some principles and things like that, but focusing on a really important topic for the church today in a culture that's changing. So Derwin, thanks so much for being on with us. It's an honor to have you.
Hey, thank you guys so much. And congratulations on the success of the podcast. You guys are killing it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Could you give us just a quick sense of maybe the heart behind the High Definition Leader, how it ties in with your current ministry, just kind of what it was born out of?
Yeah, so the High Definition Leader was born out of the reality that for my wife and I, we were unchurched. And so when Jesus grabbed a hold of our hearts in our late 20s, me in the NFL, she worked at a clinic. And so we became Christians, and immediately we were thrust into a segregated world. It was like the weirdest thing is our non-Christian life and our non-Christian relationships were very diverse. But when we became Christians, we got introduced to like Black church and white church and segregation. And it was just the strangest thing to us. And as we started to read the Bible, we seen this beautiful ancient message that the gospel of Jesus Christ through the life, death, and resurrection, ascension of Christ, that the Holy Spirit forms these communities of difference, Jews and Gentiles, that it was a very, very diverse movement, and that God's love and grace created a people who were actually like a signpost to what eternity was going to be like. The eternal church is an ethnically diverse church. And so one of the things that the Apostle Paul did is through much trial, through much suffering, through hell on earth, was plant these countercultural churches of unity and reconciliation through the gospel of Jesus Christ. So once we got that message, it was just really weird to us that the church was not that way. And so as God began to form more of Christ in us, my wife and I, along with a few other people, planted Transformation Church as an intentionally gospel-centered, multi-ethnic church, because we believe that that's not just a good idea or a good suggestion, but the outflow of what the gospel of grace creates. And so the High Definition Leader, the motif is TVs used to be in black and white. Well, America used to pretty much be black and white. But just as a high definition TV allows you to see multi colors vividly, high definition leaders see the multicolored people within their missional context, and they build local churches in conjunction with the power of the Holy Spirit to create these future people in the present who are diverse, who are reconciled and unified in Christ. So I actually believe that if the church doesn't do this by 2050, we're going to be pretty irrelevant.
And just for the leaders who are listening, do you see this as a book that's for Black people, for white people, for any particular race? Or is this, when you say multi-ethnic, you mean all of the ethnicities? This is something that everybody ought to be focusing on.
Oh, gosh, yes. This book is for every leader, every church planner, every pastor, every elder, every deacon, every Christian that cares about the message. Like the Apostle Paul planted multi-ethnic churches. That is irrefutable. It is undeniable. And so as we look at our time in America, we're so far away from that gospel message that we've become okay with white church, black church. Well, of course, you can't say white church because that's politically incorrect, but you can say black church, and that's okay, or Latino church. But the reality is, the local church is to be a missionary of all people within their missional context. And sadly, the homogeneous unit principle has influenced how pastors and church planters go about planting their churches. They have a desire to reach people who fit the market that they want to reach versus who are the people here and how do we become missionaries to reach them. And our church is incredibly diverse, probably 55% white, 45% everything else, and it's socioeconomically diverse as well. And people don't stop being white, black, Asian, or Latino. You become redeemed in your ethnicity, and you bring all of together, and we're better. Together, we reflect the heart of Christ more.
Well, I'm so glad that you brought out, you know, just your current church, that this isn't a book that you just wrote because you wanted to. It's something that you actually live out, and it has really come out of you leading through that process of planting Transformation Church and just the vision and mission that it has, and just the work that God has for you. So I love that this is, I mean, we know Derwin well. He's on our advisory council for Lifeway Leadership, and is a good friend. So, but you practice what you preach, you smoke what you sell, whatever announcement it is. I just want people to know that it is what it is.
Let's transition now into our five questions. We'll circle back around, mention the book at the end so that people can remember it on their way out the door. But let's jump into our five questions. So our first one that we ask every guest is, who are you learning from right now? So that could be people who are around you, people you're reading, people you're listening to. Just who are you learning from?
Yeah, so theologically, I would say that Scott McKnight and N.T. Wright are very, very helpful. Tony Evans is always just a great and helpful voice. You know, as far as pastors, you know, Rick Warren is always a mentor and a friend, and he really helps me with personal things. But the idea of planning a gospel-centered, multi-ethnic church, there isn't much or many people to learn from. And so we've had to innovate and learn and make mistakes. And I don't really have time to listen to sermons because I'm working on my doctorate and all that stuff. So so I would say Scott
and
McKnight.
And all that stuff.
Yeah. Scott McKnight, N.T. Wright, Barnabas Piper.
Oh, he doesn't fit that list. One of these is not like the other.
Because I read and endorse his books, man. They're awesome. They're good.
Well, I really appreciate that. So when you say Scott McKnight, N.T. Wright, Rick Warren, but you say you don't listen to sermons, so are you mostly reading these guys?
Yes. Yeah. Scott McKnight and N.T. Wright. Yeah, I'm more of a reader than a listener because I like to highlight and underline and spill coffee on book pages and stuff. So I'm kind of like a book nerd. And what I appreciate about Scott McKnight and N.T. Wright is they do a great job with first century, second temple Jewish context that the New Testament sprung out of. And so my doctorate actually emphasizes that. And so I wanted to get my doctorate in that emphasis so that when I do write, I can write with some weight of authority. And so that allows me to do so. But I find their writings very refreshing, thoroughly biblical, and they're also big proponents of the multi-ethnic church as well.
Any particular works you've been in just recently or that you're in right now from those guys or from anybody else, so we can give listeners just a couple,
yeah,
whether it's an article or a book or even just a blog post, whatever it is.
Yeah, Scott McKnight has just written a book called The Fellowship of Difference. And it's basically on the life of Paul. It is phenomenal. Another book that I thoroughly enjoyed is by Leonard Sweet and Frank Viola called Jesus, a Theography. Those have been very good, just not only from a theological church perspective, but also enriching my heart. And then another book by Pete Scazzaro that I'm working through right now, The Emotionally Healthy Leader. Every leader needs that book.
Yeah, we have heard some really good things about the Pete Scazzaro book from a couple other leaders as well. Yeah. So that seems to be one that is influencing a significant number of leaders right now.
Yeah, it's powerful. It's good.
Well, so good. I think this helps us transition actually into our second question, which is, what is the main point of emphasis for you and your leadership right now? It could be for your leadership team or you personally. What's kind of a main point of emphasis for your leadership right now?
Yeah, you know, I would say for me right now, what God has been doing in me over the last 18 months is he has allowed me to get to a place where the faith of yesterday is not the faith of what I need today. And what I mean by that is he's allowing and revealing things in me that I could not have handled 5 years ago, that by his grace, he can work in me to pry loose certain idols, whether if it's how I viewed how my family would be. And so, you know, you get to about 44, you know, I've written 4 books. I speak at various conferences. I travel the world, have an amazing church. But then disappointment and disillusion comes because of suffering or trauma or what it may be. And you find out, like, wait a second, the faith I have in this area is not the faith I have in, say, for instance, do I believe God's going to care for my kids? And so there's been like this dark night of the soul in a very healthy way, or I've hit this wall. And it's not that I did anything wrong, but it's just the next phase of development and growing my faith and trusting God's in areas where I can't do anything. Like, I could help with a capital campaign, you know, preaching, vision casting, planning. But there are certain areas of my life that God goes, yeah, you can't do anything here. I have to do it.
You know,
you got to let. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we had a conversation just recently with another leader, another pastor. He's a church planter, and he was talking about a similar kind of thing where he got to a place and there was just, it was this ongoing maturing, which for somebody like me, who's a few years younger than you, I'm not way, way younger than you. It's encouraging and a little bit intimidating to hear that, because I think as humans, we always have this mentality of, I will arrive. I will get to a place where, you know, I'll nail certain things down. I'll be good to go. Not necessarily overall, but just with the sense of dealing with certain sins, dealing with certain areas of life. So to hear that a leader who is ahead of me is still growing, is still struggling, is equal parts encouraging, because I see you pressing on and see guys like you pressing on, but discouraging because it just sort of sets in the realization that you don't arrive, you don't complete, and at least not in this life.
Yeah, the aspect of teleos, you know, will take place when we take our last breath and open our eyes and we see Jesus. But you know, it's really a deepening and thickening time. And what I'm learning too is that God isn't necessarily allowing me to discover this new aspect of faith so that I can go somewhere or do something. It's more about so that I could be someone, and that's conformed to the image of Christ, to be a conduit of the fruit and character of the Spirit. And I think as leaders, so much, we're always trying to do this, accomplish that. And God's greatest goal is to accomplish Christ in us. And so as I've walked through, you know, it's not like sin. It's more of God revealing, like, here's an area of your life. And specifically, it's with my kids. It's like, do you trust me with my children, with your kids, which, by the way, they're my kids? Do you trust me with them? I know you trust me with a building campaign and growing a church and being multi-ethnic and writing books and all this other stuff. But do you trust me with what you value most? And it's almost similar to, like, you know, Abraham taking Isaac up Mount Moriah, right? To say, yeah, let's go worship. And so it's beautiful. I have never been stronger, but I've never been weaker.
Well, that I think that sets things up nicely for our third question, which is, what obstacles are you currently facing in leadership? So your point of emphasis was an area of growth and struggle a little bit, but what obstacles are you currently facing? And that could either be organizationally or personally. So as a church, as a ministry, or for you as the individual leader?
Yeah, you know, I would say with Transformation Church, our vision, you know, we are intentionally multi-ethnic, multi-generational, mission-shaped. And so we're bringing people on staff into a multi-ethnic church. That's just different from the Jumpstart. We are also not a quote-unquote seeker-sensitive model type of a church, even though in 5 years we've grown from 170 to over 3,000. We've seen 3,000 people come to faith, 1,100 baptisms. It's just been epic what the Lord has done. But so we're not an attractional type of a church, though we attract a lot of lost people, because we talk about our congregation that you are missionaries, that you are to go out prayerfully in awareness of who God is, and to what God wants to do in people's lives. But I would say the biggest thing that I'm seeing now is, the more your organization grows, the more church grows, the more complex it becomes. And so systems and processes and communication is very important, but also the orientation and reteaching of people that you bring onto your team, because there are people who come from a church growth model who our way of doing things is just foreign to them, because so much out there is about how do you attract a crowd. So, for example, with our church, we pour our resources into the core. That's our servant leaders, our volunteers. We pour our resources into small group leaders. And so people from a church growth model have been taught, well, how do we attract folks? Let's put our resources and our effort on attracting. And our thing is, no, we want to put our resources and efforts on building leaders. So as we grow deeper, the roots grow deeper, and we will grow wide as well, versus just growing wide but being shallow. And so that's something that I'm seeing with several new staff, that we got to do a better job of educating them and orienting them to our values and culture.
So, what does that look like practically in terms of orienting them? So, you talked about the different mindsets of people coming from other churches with a growth mindset and sort of that strategy in place. What does it look like to help them reorient? So from day one, what are you doing? What does reteaching look like?
Yeah. So we have an orientation process, but I'm thinking we're going to have to revamp that. And then every Tuesday we have transformation time, where for an hour I'll walk my staff through, or one of the other elder pastors will walk the staff through a curriculum, you know? So what I'm seeing now, like, for example, a person that's been on staff for about 4 months, he came to me and said, okay, so you say that we're not an event driven church and it's not just about the weekend. So in kids ministry, how am I supposed to make this fun for them when they come to church, when they go to church? And my thing to him was, okay, let's start over, because your premise is wrong. If they're believers, they don't go to church. They are the church. And when the church gathers, we celebrate the wondrous and epic works of Christ. We are instructed in the gospel. We have fellowship. You know, we learn to express our faith as missionaries. So it's not about making the weekend fun. It's about an identity of a people that we come together to celebrate as God's people. Then we scatter to be as missionaries. And he was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And I'm like, man, he's been with us for 4 months and he didn't have that?
Well, yeah. It must take longer than 4 months.
I definitely think it takes longer than 4 months. And if you don't have, you know, alignment within, you know, your vision, mission, you know, what your conviction is, and your culture doesn't back that up, and then your constructs, your systems and your processes don't back that up further, then you're out of alignment. And, you know, totally. If you have conviction without the constructs, you get frustration. If you have constructs without conviction, you get apathy or exhaustion because, you know, it's like, oh, we're doing all this stuff, but why are we doing it?
Yeah.
And totally. The real danger is, you know, people go book a judges and they do whatever's right in their own mind.
So just to, before we jump into our fourth question, you have laid out some a kind of a framework for church leaders that I suspect will really resonate with a lot of people because it's something that they would aspire to, but they're not quite sure how to get to in their own church. Can they find a lot of this, how you have gone about it, things you've discovered, the importance of it in the High Definition Leader in that book?
Yes. So in the High Definition Leader, I chronicle all the things that we're learning to do at Transformation Church, and I place them in there for the purpose of leaders being able to adapt it and put it in their context and even make it better. And so one of the difficult things for me, and I don't want this to sound prideful, is when I go to conferences, I'm pretty much going to learn how to do a suburban seeker type model of a church.
You can say white too.
And white. Yeah. Yeah. And so like at times, man, I feel like I'm on this island just alone. Now there's a few other of us, but man, and so I think this will be a resource for those that this is resonating with to say, man, yeah, this is really good. And then we're also starting to do roundtables every quarter where I'll get 20 leaders who come and spend a day and a half with me, and we will walk them through just a day and a half of what does a high definition leader look like. And a part of that is the soul care aspect, because there's a lot of leaders who are getting burned out and who are emotionally unhealthy.
All right, let me move us into our fourth question, which is, what does leadership look like in your home?
Yeah. So great question. And it's the most important question, I think, for any leader. I define leadership as more than influence. I define leadership as embodying what you want other people to become.
Well, that's good.
And so that often puts you in a posture of servanthood. I'm not quite sure if the American evangelical model of leadership is Jesus's model of leadership, because the Jesus model of leadership puts on a towel and does the task of the least slave in a Jewish or Roman home where you're washing the feet of your disciples. The leadership that I hear now is you stand up and you tell everybody what to do and you're epic. The leadership of Jesus is, this is what leadership looks like, and I'm going to serve you to this point. It's humble. It's godly. It's beautiful. It's loving. It's sacrificial. And so that's what I want to embody in my home. And I think, and I could totally be wrong, I wish my wife would answer this part, but I think the greatest thing that I do as a leader in my home is apologize to my kids when I'm wrong. I think that's the greatest thing that I can do, because, man, I'm not perfect. And I think that when I blow it, the greatest thing I can do to show them leadership is to go to the foot of their beds and say, you know what, Dad was wrong. Will you forgive me? And this is what I did wrong. And I think this is why I did what I did was wrong, and why I raised my voice. And oftentimes when I find myself raising my voice, it's rooted in my insecurity or my fear for my children versus rooting it in a sovereign and awesome and beautiful God. That if God can save me, he can save anybody. If God can do in my life what he's done, he certainly can do the same in theirs. And so I think the first thing is, you know, apologize. And secondly, is that my wife is my most important ministry. We've been married 23 years. We got married in college, and we're more in love today than we were yesterday. And she's my best friend. So I hope that they see in me a father who serves their mother and loves the best out of their mom, and that we have a beautiful, healthy marriage.
Well, I think what you said about apologizing is so important. I think especially for leaders, because so much of the vision for leadership, or not the vision, the impression of leadership that people have is confidence, is hard charging, you know, sort of take no prisoners, that kind of mindset. And it doesn't work very well in the home. I'm not sure that it works very well in an organization, but it really doesn't work well in the home. And for church leaders, if you're not willing to apologize when you screw up, you're teaching your kids that there's no grace and that there is no forgiveness, that they can't apologize when they screw up because it's not safe. And so that, I think it models humility, and it also models the grace of God, because you're showing them how to forgive. You're showing your need for forgiveness, and you're setting a context in which, like you said, you are being the kind of person that you want them to be, somebody who can ask for forgiveness and then can receive it as well.
Yeah, thank you, Barnabas. That's what I want to embody to my kids. And you know, I've been a team captain in football in high school for one of the best teams in the state of Texas, in college for one of the best teams in college, and then I was a team captain in the NFL. So I get, you know, the big, strong, macho guy and all that. And a lot of times when I hear leadership, it's this confident, strong, follow me and I'm going to do this. And it looks more like a CEO than a shepherd. And God calls us leaders in the church to be shepherds, not celebrity CEOs. And then even in small churches, you'll have pastors who are people pleasers who end up becoming butlers, you know? I mean, shepherd is a whole different type of spiritual entity, but humility is at the root and the base of it. And that's what I wanna embody and model to my kids and to my wife, though I do it very, very imperfectly, but I want my greatest minister to be in my home.
Well, speaking of humility, that sets up our fifth question almost perfectly, because most 20-year-olds are not very humble people. And our fifth question is, what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead? If you could go back and talk to 20-year-old Derwin Gray, what would you tell him
about preparing to lead? I have a feeling it's
going to
be good.
Oh my gosh, the first thing I would do is tell him, shut up. Shut up, man. I'm just thankful that, you know, when I was 20, we didn't have Twitter and blogs and Facebook and social media, because if we did, I would have been spouting off a bunch of stuff that I hadn't experienced. And one of my fears for the younger leaders in this generation is they'll listen to Bill Hybels or Craig Rochelle or John Piper or whoever it may be and tweet something as though they said it, or write a book about something they haven't experienced because publishers are pimping them to make money because of their platform. And what happens is when our words don't match the reality that we actually live in, I think that's where burnout happens, affairs, and just unhealthy leadership. So the first thing that I would say was just shut up and listen. That the world was okay before Derwin Gray was born. Jesus was not biting his nails, seated next to the Father in glory, waiting until April 9th, 1971. I promise you, he was not. I'm not that important. And then, you know, the need to be known, the need to be number one, the need to be competitive. No, we need the greatest need of all, to be loved. I would say slow down to the young leader and marinate in the deep, deep love of God, and let that transform the hurts and wounds that you don't even know you have yet. And then find somebody, and not a person who simply has the biggest church or the best platform, but find a godly mentor And when I mean godly, I'm talking about fruit of the Spirit. Like their lives are fruity, right? And then you see them operating in the various gifts that the Spirit has given them, but all clothed and cloaked in humility, and sit at their feet and learn and ask questions about life. Because every aspect of leadership ultimately will be autobiographical, that as God writes his redemptive story in us and through us, that colors how we lead. So slow down and marinate and let God redemptively shape you, but then find godly mentors and allow how God has shaped them to influence you. And I would say that to me.
I can say that having a mentor when I was probably a little bit older than 20, but early 20s it was the guardrails for me that kept me from doing all sorts of stupid stuff. And it wasn't somebody with a big ministry. It was a guy who was a parent of some kids in the youth ministry that I worked with. And he was a veterinarian who was pursuing ministry and just a wise person who spoke all of those fruits of the Spirit into my life. And I didn't listen very well because I wasn't very good at that. But he was enormously influential for me. So yes, that advice for a young person is significant.
Tremendous. And for an old person as well, an older person, because you know, we're never done learning, and leaders have a tendency after a certain amount of success, or, you know, like Derwin, who has launched a church and grown it to 3,000 and everybody wants to hear what he has to say. You have a hard time subjecting yourself to hearing what someone has to say, or inviting that feedback into your life. And it's a subject that I think that's come up again and again on our podcast, but it is inviting someone into your life to speak into your strengths and your weaknesses and just your leadership, your life. Because if you don't invite people into your life to question some of the things you do, you're going to end up doing questionable things.
Mm-hmm. And then it becomes covers the glory of Christ when we allow our unhealthiness to splatter all over the place. And that's why I think that multi-generational local churches are so important. It's like everybody wants to be the cool hip pastor with all the cool friends and the skinny leg jeans and whatever it may be. I'm like, man, a family has great grandparents, grandparents, moms and dads, uncles and cousins, 20 somethings down to teenagers to babies, and multi-generational cross pollination is so, so important. And we are at Transformation Church, we're thoroughly committed to that as well. And we have found that to be one of the aspects that young people thought they didn't want, but now they realize they need.
And besides all that, Derwin, I don't know that they make skinny jeans for someone of your particular stature.
Yeah,
that's not a fat joke for our listeners, by the way. Derwin is built like the linebacker he used to be, not like a portly gentleman.
Yeah, I'm thick. I still lift weights and I'm thick. So skinny leg jeans would not get above my calf. And then I don't think my wife would let me rock any skinnies at all. So, if a guy wants to rock skinnies, that's cool. Just make sure your heart is filled with grace and humility and you don't pass out for jeans being too tight.
Well, I think we should mic drop right there. I think that's the final word for leaders today. Well, Derwin, it has been awesome having you on. Thanks so much for making the time to talk to us about leadership.
Hey, you guys are great, and continued success. And any way I can help y'all let me know. Thank you.
We will. And that was this episode of the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Again, before we sign off, Derwin's new book is The High Definition Leader. It is about building multicultural churches, multi-ethnic churches, and we talked a lot about that today. So if that's something that pricked your heart or piqued your interest, you can get that at Lifeway.com, at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. So jump out there and get The High Definition Leader. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.